Once Smoke saw the horses on their way, he waded into cleaning up Muddy Gap. His first target was the saloon.
Looks like somebody who don't have any business here. Why don't you just turn around and get the hell out?
Smoke centered on the man. His left arm extended. He shot a finger at the pugnacious thug.
I want your name, now.
Rafe Diggins. I'm the meanest, toughest, wooliest sea coon in these parts.
I doubt that.
Brawny barroom tough cocked a ham fist back by his ear, prepared to knock the lights out of this log dog. Grinning, Smoke just waited for it. When the punch came, Smoke didn't move his body. He just jinked his head to the side. Then he unloaded with a low right uppercut. Then Smoke laid a hard left to the side of the bigger man's jaw. Rafe sprang to his boots and waded in again. Staggered, Rafe tried a kick. Smoke caught his boot and raised it while he twisted. Rafe's head struck the edge of the bar. Confident that it was over, Smoke turned to address the cluster of remaining trash.
I want the rest of you out of here and out of town. You have 10 minutes.
Rafe Diggins recovered faster than expected.
Oh, ain't nobody gonna hold me down.
He bounded off the floor. A glint came off a knife he held low in his right hand. Smoke saw it at once and pivoted to evade a straight thrust. Quickly, he scooped up the leg of a chair. The knife fell from his grasp. At once, the experienced brawler went for his six gun left-handed. Smoke Jensen shot him in the shoulder.
Shit.
Diggins rammed his back into the bar. He stiffened, then sagged into feet. Smoke reached him in four quick strides. Roughly, Smoke slammed the man around and searched for more hideout weapons. Then he began to frog march Diggins out the door and off to jail. But Rafe recovered enough to overcome his pain and make one more try. From a leather pouch suspended by a cord down his back, he snatched a straight razor and snapped it open as he made a vicious slash at Smoke Jensen's throat. Smoke didn't hesitate. The big .45 Colt Peacemaker filled his right hand. Rafe Diggins jolted to a stop, and looked down disbelievingly at the black hole in the center of his chest that began to leak red. His uninjured arm dropped to his side, and the razor fell from his numb grasp. Smoke turned his attention to the thoroughly cowed collection of rogues standing in the saloon's doorway.
Like I said, I'm posting you out of town. After 10 minutes, if any of you are still here, I'll come after you. And I'm warning you, I will shoot to kill.
In a mad scramble, they left in all directions, like a flock of pigeons with a fox in the barn. Word of Smoke's accomplishments spread rapidly around town. Aaron Tucker, the owner and daytime bartender at the Sorry Place Saloon, rushed outside when Smoke passed by to wring his hand and offer praise.
Let me tell you something, Sheriff Jensen. You're doing a marvelous job. There's some shanty trash hanging around my place. Nothing I did could get rid of it. When they heard of what happened at the Gold Boot, they cleared out without a word.
Well, thank you.
I'm Aaron Tucker. I own this place. Anything you want, anytime you come in, it's on the house.
Well, that's not necessary, Mr. Tucker.
No, I know that. That's why I'm offering it.
Well, thank you again.
When he completed his rounds, Smoke returned to the office to find another form of gratitude. A small rectangle of cream-colored notepaper lay on his desk. He opened it and read the contents.
Dear Sheriff Jensen, I fear that I failed terribly in expressing my gratitude for my rescue at your hand. Violence upsets me, and I have recently been subjected to such shocking indignities that I quite forgot myself. please let me make it up to you with an invitation to a late supper this evening. I will expect you at 8 o'clock, if that is suitable. Virginia Parkins.
Smoke Jensen puckered his lips as he put the note aside. It would appear the schoolteacher knew her manners after all. What's more, he had always been a sucker for a home-cooked meal, especially one prepared by such an attractive young woman. Yeah, he would enjoy that supper. But then images of his Sally, so far away, clouded his anticipation. Smoke looked up to see a small, freckle-faced boy standing expectantly in the open doorway. His name, Smoke had learned, was Jimmy. He had come by earlier and informed Smoke that he had done odd jobs for the late sheriff. Smoke decided to make use of his services now.
Just a minute, Jimmy. I have something for you to do.
Smoke found paper and a worn steel-nib pen in the top drawer. Carefully, he drew the letters of his acceptance in a fine copperplate script. He blotted it, folded the sheet in half, and extended it to the boy.
Take this to Miss Parkins, please.
Our teacher? What is it about?
That's not for you to know. Here's a dime for your trouble.
Then Smoke leaned back to reflect on his progress. Considering he had 7 in jail, at least 15 run out of town, and another on his way to Boot Hill, plus an invitation to supper, Smoke thought he'd made a good start at getting a handle on the undesirable element in Muddy Gap. He might even be able to rejoin the herd within 3 days or so.
Mr. Jensen, you saved my life, my job, and my reputation. I can't thank you enough.
Virginia Parkins blushed lightly as she spoke.
Only one thing.
Yes, and please, call me Smoke.
Very well. Smoke. My friends call me Ginny. I suppose that, all considered, there was no other way of handling that awful, awful situation this morning. It's just that I have devoted my life to ending the violence with which we, as a people, seem obsessed.
Smoke Jensen sat, somewhat ill at ease, on a delicate velvet-upholstered chair in the parlor of Virginia's tiny house. The rich aroma of a roast and cut of beef came from the cast-iron cook stove in the kitchen. Mingled with it was the unmistakable aroma of peach pie. Their supper might be late, but it was far from light. Conscious of the need not to offend her, Smoke carefully weighed his reply.
You're right about the first part, Jenny. Under the circumstances, the only thing those craven louts would properly respond to was superior force. Bullies like Brandon Kelso take any show of politeness or mild manner behavior as a sign of weakness. That's exactly what they feed upon. So in order to get them to behave in a proper manner, I first had to get their attention.
Well, you certainly did that. Well, what if one of them had produced a weapon?
Then I would have had to shoot that one.
May we speak of something else?
Certainly. Muddy Gap is a raw new town. How many students does that afford you?
I have 16, from 1st to 8th grade.
That's quite a few for a place on the edge of nowhere. My wife was a school teacher when I met her.
Is that so? I'm surprised at her attraction to a lawman.
So was she.
And were you?
Oh, no. I think I fell in love the first time I met Sally. She was and is so different than any other woman I've ever encountered. And beautiful, too.
You are a lucky man, Smoke, to have wooed and won someone whom you feel so strongly about. I'm sure that roast is ready now. Go on into the table. I'll have everything on in a minute. All I need to do is fix the gravy.
All that and gravy, too. Feel like a regular guest of honor. Don't tell me you have home-baked bread to sop with.
Oh, I certainly do.
Then let us begin.
Aaron Tucker was unaccustomed to being called back to the sorry place at night. His summons came from the night bartender, delivered by the old fellow who worked as a swamper. He showed up on the front porch of the Tucker house at 8:30 that night.
Fred says there's trouble brewing, Mr. Tucker. Some of those gun hawks are getting drunk and making talk about ambushing the new sheriff.
They might find that harder to do than they expect. All right, I'll come.
When they reached the saloon, Aaron Tucker found the situation worse than he had expected. Five surly men lined the bar. Four more sat around a table, cards spread before them for a game of five-card stud. Behind the mahogany, Fred Barnes wore a worried expression. The only friendly face in the saloon was that of Mayor Lester Norton. He nodded a curt greeting to Aaron and cut his eyes around the room. Aaron saw what he meant. The usual local clientele had been run out or had not come in at all. Aaron walked up to him.
What brings you out tonight, Les?
My mother-in-law is visiting. Enough said.
How long's she gonna be here for?
A week or more. There's no telling with her, Aaron. I thought the new sheriff was working to clear out this riffraff.
Well, he is. Has to rest sometime and eat a meal. I hear the school marm invited him to supper.
Aaron shot a nervous glance around the place.
I think we need Sheriff Jensen. Les, will you go prevail upon him to come down here?
Mayor Norton pushed away from the far end of the bar.
Sure, Aaron. The sooner we rid our town of this sort, the better. It won't take long to get him.
Smoke Jensen and Virginia Parkin sat in her parlor, sipping coffee and letting their meal settle. Smoke felt minor discomfort at her proximity. He should have brought someone along, maybe the mayor. Or Jenny should have provided a third party.
Oh, excuse me.
She came back with the mayor in tow.
Mr. Jensen, it is certain that trouble is brewing at the Sorry Place. There are a number of ruffians gathered there. They made talk of bushwhacking you.
They just lost their chance. Excuse me, Miss Jenny. It appears I have more to do before I can settle down at the jail.
Be careful, Smoke. Surely they'll be reasonable. Like those others who left town on their own.
I wouldn't.
What the mayor means is that he wouldn't worry if he were you. Shall we go? This shouldn't take long.
Please, let me know how it comes out.
I'll stop by before making my last rounds.
It had all been worked out while the mayor had been absent from the saloon. The four men who had been playing cards now stood at the rear of the room, their backs to the wall. The five hard cases who lined the bar had spread out. They eyed the batwing doors intently, marking the time. Aaron Turner had gone behind the bar. One hand hovered over a hefty bung starter. Mayor Norton entered the saloon first, nearly precipitating a fusillade. Two of the gunmen at the rear actually unlimbered their six guns. Smoke Jensen came in a moment behind the mayor, his Colt 45 leading the way. And the next second, Smoke roughly shoved Lester Norton to the floor. Smoke dived into a roll that took him halfway across the room. He came up with bullets cutting the air to both sides and over his head. Smoke dived behind an overturned table. Another man in the back of the room sprang backward and collided discordantly with the upright piano. Smoke holstered his right-hand revolver and reached for his second peacemaker, worn high and on his left side, butt forward and slanted across his hard, flat stomach. A slug from one of the hard cases at the bar clipped the hat from his head.
I love that hat!
He returned the favor with a bullet that struck the face of the cylinder in the offended six gun. Another man tried to work his way around to Smoke's blind side. He made three side steps along the bar and stopped suddenly when Aaron Turner rapped him smartly on top of his head with a bung starter. Alone in a rain of such fury, the remaining hard case chose wisdom over pain. He reversed the revolver and offered it to Smoke butt first. Far too wise in the ways of gun handling, Smoke did not fall for that one. Instead, he gestured toward the green baize top of a poker table.
Lay it down there. Do it, or I'll shoot you anyway.
Smoke turned to where the mayor remained sprawled on the floor.
Now, Mr. Mayor, if you'd be so kind as to help me take this garbage out of here and lock him up.
What's the charge?
Assaulting a peace officer for a start. Maybe the territorial attorney can make attempted murder stick.
No, man, I swear, no. We didn't intend to kill you. You just bust you up a little and run you out of town. Nobody said a thing about killing. I swear.
He lies. That one stood right here and said that they would bury you come tomorrow. They all thought it was a good idea. The mouthy one there said something about drilling you tonight and planting you in the morning.
Say, I wanted to thank you for your timely assistance. You're pretty handy with that thing.
Turner looked down at the bung starter in his hand and back at Smoke. He smiled shyly, and his ears colored.
Oh, this? Well, I get a lot of practice.
Might be you won't have near as much for some while.
With that, Smoke and the mayor started off with their prisoners. Before making his last rounds of the business district of Muddy Gap, Smoke Jensen returned to the small house owned by Jenny Parkins.
Jenny, is that you? Did I disturb you?
Go away.
What? I thought...
I heard the gunshots. I heard it all. I know what that means for you to be here now. Someone else didn't survive. I'm sorry, Smoke, but violence and those who cause it are not a part of my life. Now, goodbye.
Goodbye, Jenny. Thank you for your delicious supper.
Smoke trudged away, thinking gloomy thoughts about school teachers. His own dear Sally had had similar opinions when first they had met. At least this time, he had no one to woo and win. Reno Jim Urien and his gang sat around a large table in the office of what had once been a prosperous, if short-lived, mine. A good 20 years earlier, Arapaho warriors, angered at seeing the belly of their earth mother plundered, had attacked and killed the six men working the claim. Because the mine shaft was accessed from a small shed attached to the office, the engines didn't burn it down out of religious awe. Now, a new wealth visited the abandoned structure. Each of the outlaws had a stack of coins and currency in front of them. To the casual observer, they could have been preparing for a poker game. In fact, Reno Jim had only seconds before finished the distribution of each man's share of their most recent forays into the criminal life. It came to quite a tidy amount. As one, they began to count the total. Reno Jim waited until they had finished, and he had their full attention.
That's only a start, boys. We'll move the cattle and horses at the same time.
Won't that cost a lot to feed the cattle so long, boss?
Not really. They're on a graze, and there's plenty of it. When we have the horses, we'll move them at once. First, though, there is the problem of this fast gun running the horse herd. If he wasn't bullying Colin here... We have a serious obstacle in our way, and his name is Smoke Jensen.
Early the next morning, Smoke Jensen left the sheriff's office and paid a brief breakfast call on the town marshal. Inside the iron kettle, Grover Larson glared across the red-checked tablecloth at the badge adorning Smoke Jensen's chest. Somehow, he could not manage to meet the amber-flecked eyes.
What did you drag me down here for?
I need your cooperation, Marshal Lawson.
Cooperation? What kind?
The Harbinsons have a printing press over at the general store, don't they?
Yes, they do. Why?
I want you to come over there with me. I intend to post guns out of the town. It would help if you had your name and signature on the flyers also.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound like too much to ask.
Then you'll do it.
You bought me breakfast. I suppose it's the least I can do. Besides, it's my duty. Mind, though, I'm opposed to interfering with a man's right to carry a gun.
Yeah, well, so am I. I intend only to post against non-residents. The citizens of Muddy Gap and those known to be local folks will not be affected by it. That's why I need your help in enforcing it. You know who belongs and who don't. Do it, Marshal.
I didn't count on that. There's some rough characters out there.
Listen, you little piss-ass coward. That's why I'll see you have someone to back your play. While you relieve any strangers of their guns, they can cover them.
Might work after all. Yep. Let's finish up and we'll go see young Eb Harbison.
A black mourning band showed prominently on the sleeve of Ed Harbison's shirt. He seemed reluctant to dig into the cast type and dirty the press to print so small a run. He listened to what Smoke wanted, nodded to show the ability of his equipment to do the job, and rubbed the palms of his hands on his trouser legs.
Well, see? We planned to start a newspaper, but there aren't enough people in town yet to justify the expense. I suppose printing these flyers is a better use of the press than, well, gathering dust. But if you want signatures, you'll either have to sign each one separately, or you'll have to do it on a blank plate and etch around them.
How long will it take?
I'd say you could have them late tomorrow.
Eh, not soon enough. We'll sign them.
How many do you want, Sheriff?
I want one in each business in town. On the church and school also. And two for each end of town. A few spares in case someone takes exception to them. Say 25, 30.
Fine. I can have them ready by 10 o'clock this morning.
After leaving the General Mercantile, Smoke Jensen started his rounds of the saloons to hustle the unwanted element out of town. The first of the unsavory batch he encountered were Bert Toller, Quint Kress, and Big Sam Piper. The trio of fair to middling gunfighters stood at the bar in the Golden Boot tormenting the swamper. The gray-haired older man toiled to put down fresh sawdust after the previous night's cleanup and mopping.
Hey, boy! Your hand's shaking so much you got sawdust on my boots! What you need is a drink, old-timer!
No, sir. I done gave up drinking.
Oh, yeah? When? After they invented the funnel?
Oh, please, fellas. I got work to do.
Bert Toller crossed to the cowed man and yanked the bucket of sawdust from his grasp.
You get sawdust on my boots again, and they'll be planting you before sundown.
That's the last time you do that.
Toller whirled a shower of yellowish wood chips flying from the rim of the bucket.
Oh, yeah? Who says so?
I do, Sheriff Jensen. Now return the bucket to the man and let him get on with his work.
Toller dropped the bucket to the floor and then started for the door.
I'll be waiting for you outside, Jensen.
Smoke let him go. He turned to the remaining pair and addressed Big Sam.
You seem to have more sense than your friend. This town is off limits to you and your kind. So I'll ask you politely. Gather up whatever you brought with you, mount up, and ride out. You have 15 minutes.
I don't mind you ragging Quint some. He needs tooken down a notch. But you just asked something we can't do. Why, we'd be the laughing stock of the whole territory. No, sir, we ain't gonna go.
With that, he and Quint Kress, who had said nothing so far, dropped hands to the grips of their six guns. Immediately, Smoke swung the smoking barrel of his Colt to Big Sam Piper. Big Sam stared at his partner and watched him die.
No! Well, I ain't gonna die!
Wildly, he threw a shot at Smoke over his shoulder. Smoke fired as Big Sam hit the batwing door. Sam Piper crashed through the swinging partitions and onto the boardwalk. His blood streamed down his thigh. Smoke Jensen came right behind him.
Goddammit! He shot me! Oh, it hurts real bad!
Well, you ain't never been shot before? What kind of gunfighter are you?
No, I ain't been shot. I was always faster.
Sam, get out of the way. Let me finish this amateur.
Big Sam staggered in a tight circle, raising his Smith American.
No, I'm gonna do it. Nobody puts a hole in Big Sam Piper.
He faced Smoke Jensen now, who, much to the consternation of Big Sam, had an amused expression on his face. Careful deliberation, his own visage screwed into a grimace of pain, Big Sam raised his revolver. For the first time, the bravado deserted Toller, yet he knew inexorably that the hand had to be played out to the end. He swallowed hard to remove the lump in his throat and dropped his hand to the grips of his Colt. He figured Jensen, his head wreathed in powder smoke, couldn't possibly see him draw.
Oh!
Toler started to double over in reflex, only to be straightened up by another enormous pain in his chest.
Toler! What are you, Jensen? Who are you?
Some people have called me the Gunfighter's Gunfighter.
And then, Bert Toler heard and saw only blackness. Early that same morning, Reno Jim Urien and his men sat astride their mounts overlooking a long, narrow depression in the prairie, too shallow to be called a valley. A wide, deep ravine defined the western margin, with a large, round knob bordering the east. In its center ran the trail north through the Bighorn Mountains and on toward Buffalo, Wyoming. From there, it led north into Montana and the Crow Reservation. Reno Jim tilted back the brim of his black, flat-crowned Stetson and waved a gloved hand at the peaceful spread of terrain.
There it is, boys. The perfect place to take that herd. I reckon it will be here no more than a day, two at most. Hub, I want you to set the boys up in preparing an ambush. Take your time and make it look natural. The last thing we want is them to get wise too soon. Also, make sure there's enough men mounted on both sides beyond the rise to take quick control of the herd.
Under Hub Volker's direction, the men spread out to locate a good spot to establish a roadblock-style ambush. It took only a short while to accomplish that. Garth Evans rode back from around a slight bend in the trail with a cheery smile.
Hey, Hub, I got the ideal place. That bend there will mask it, and there's some cottonwoods to form a barricade.
Good work, Garth.
At once, Hub put men on cutting down the trees. One by one, the five thick cottonwood trees tottered and fell. Dragged into place by horses, the logs were trimmed and made ready. Sets of post augers appeared from a chuck wagon, and the outlaw rabble groaned. Harry Joe cut his eyes to Prime Gephardt as he plied a clamshell post hole digger.
Doing that corral for the cattle was bad enough. Now we gotta build a damn fort wall.
He slammed the device into the hard ground again. Prime cranked the long handle on his screw-type digger.
Tain't a fort, Joe. It's a sort of fence, like we're making a whole valley into a corral.
This is gonna take a week to close across the whole valley. From what I hear, we ain't got that much time.
Well, get it done. If Pop has to make us work all night.
Oh, great. I can hardly wait.
Progress went quicker than Harry Joe thought, though. By nightfall, all but 100 yards at each side of the valley had been closed off. Tired far beyond their usual limits, they gathered quietly to eat plates of chili con carne colorada, bowls of beans, and cornbread with which to sop up both of them. Only 4 of them pulled bottles of whiskey from saddlebags to take long pulls before settling down like the rest into deep slumber. Meanwhile, Smoke Jensen set about a quick, harsh cleanup of Muddy Gap. He picked up the posters at 10:15. After putting one on the bulletin board outside the general store, he gave half to Marshal Larson, and they set about posting the entire town. Their actions generated immediate reaction. Several merchants came onto the boardwalk to voice protest. It never failed to draw a crowd.
Now see here, you can't do this. I've got a right to carry a gun.
You're not affected, Mr. Time Mayor. Read it carefully. Only non-residents are required to surrender their arms.
Even so, you have no right to do this on your own.
I'm not. You can see the city's marshal's signature right here beside mine. And this morning, the mayor and city council met and passed the ordinance.
For half an hour, Smoke busied himself tacking up the edicts, ending with the two at the north end of town. He had finished the final nail when 5 specimens of range trash drifted up. Hats pulled down low on brows, they walked their mounts to the gatepost where Smoke had affixed one of the flyers. They read it with obvious difficulty. At last, one of them turned to glower at Smoke.
Who are you to try to make us do that?
I'm the law.
Leaning forward, the mouthy one jabbed a thick forefinger at Smoke.
You're a fool if you think we're going to give up our guns.
You do or you don't cross the town line.
You play hell stopping us, you two-bit, ten-star, yellow-belly...
Smoke reached up swiftly to snatch the offending finger. At once, Smoke let go and grabbed the front of the man's shirt. With a solid yank, jerked him clear of the saddle. Immediately, the others went for their guns. Smoke came to his boots in an instant and hauled his Colt Peacemaker clear in a blur. The four thugs gaped at him.
Now put your guns on the gate over there, or pick up your friend here and get the hell out of town.
Cutting their eyes from one to the other, the four stared in wonder. For all his misery, the one at Smoke's feet got up real quick and mounted his horse. All of them tried not to meet the hot eyes of Smoke Jensen, which bored into him. With submissive touches of their hands to the brims of their hats, they turned their horses and rode away. Little Jimmy showed up at noon with a plate for Smoke from the Iron Kettle. It held fried chicken, gravy with boiled potatoes, and hominy. He also had an encouraging message.
Fred Chase, one of your deputies, is back in town. He says he'll come out and relieve you after dinner. Said he should be here about 1:15 this afternoon.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Can I stay here until you finish? I'll take your plate back, okay?
It's may I, Jimmy. And yes, you may.
Oh, boy! But maybe I'll get to see you wallop a few bad men.
You had better hope you don't. Which reminds me, if anything turns rough out here while you're around, duck. I mean, crawl underground.
Yes, sir!
After lunch, Smoke started for the first of two saloons he had on his list to clean out this afternoon. When he shoved his way through the bat wings, Smoke walked smack into a fist in the mouth. Smoke rocked back on his boot heels, then lowered his head and dove into the man who had hit him. Red Kramer sprang to his feet and made a dive for Smoke Jensen. Smoke waited for his charge. At the last second, he sidestepped and clipped Red behind the ear. Slower this time, Red Kramer came to his boots again. Smoke stood there ready to meet him. Only this time, Red decided he'd had enough of bare-handed grappling. He dropped a hand to his holster and hauled on his hog leg. He should have known better. Smoke faced the remaining occupants of the Red Rooster Saloon.
You men were already in town when I posted it, though by this time you had to have seen one or more notices on your way in here. So I'll give you exactly 30 seconds to rid yourselves of every firearm you're carrying and any knife with more than a 3-inch blade. There are no exceptions. Failure to comply will result in being escorted out of town by way of a visit to the Justice of the Peace and a stay in jail.
A long, silent 15 seconds clicked away on the octagonal face of the oak-cased regulator wall clock above the piano. Then, slowly among one another, three of the riffraff began to deposit weapons on the bar. When the slender black hand reached 20 seconds, four more began to divest themselves of six guns and knives. A 30-second deadline arrived in the Red Rooster, and Smoke Jensen cut his eyes from one to another of the three holdouts, then down at the corpse cooling on the floor.
If you don't want to join him, I suggest you join your friends over there at the bar.
Two of them looked at Smoke as though he had spoken in tongues. The third scuttled to the bar and began to unburden his person of all arms. The pendulum of the regulator ticked again, and the second hand advanced. One of the holdouts began to sweat profusely. His hand trembled visibly as he raised a finger to point at Smoke. Then he bowed his head, his bravado deflated, as he shuffled to join the others who had given up their weapons. With a flicker of a smile, Smoke addressed the thoroughly cowed brigands.
Thank you, boys. When you're ready to leave town, you can pick these up at the sheriff's office. Herb, put the hardware behind the bar. Someone will be by to pick it all up later.
With that, Smoke turned on his heel and left. Shortly after noon, Smoke Jensen left the task of collecting firearms to his deputy, Fred Chase, and headed for the sorry place. There, he ordered a schooner of beer and helped himself to the free lunch counter. He stood at the bar munching on a sandwich he had made of ham, rare roast beef, and two cheeses when four of the local merchants entered and walked purposefully toward him.
Sheriff, we have to talk.
What's on your minds?
This scheme of yours might work well for you, Sheriff, but we believe you have gone too far.
And how's that? There are less heart cases in town, isn't that right?
Well, what you say is true, only there may be too few of them around.
Meaning what?
Well, we've talked it over, and we all agree. This posting has been bad for business. Sales are down all over town. You have to stop turning people away.
I am not turning people away. They have a choice. Surrender their guns, or they don't come into town.
The way we see this, it's the same thing. A lot of local ranchers have heard about it, and they're not coming in for their supplies. That hurts business all around.
Don't you think they butcher their own stock?
Of course they do. If I don't sell them beef and pork, they're still hams and bacon. Folks don't build smokehouses around here. Wrong kind of wood. Then there's my friends here, the other merchants in town. They are really suffering. You have to let people come into town.
Smoke studied the protesters a while, noted the expressions of urgency they all wore, then tore off a mouthful of sandwich and munched it. A flash of anger crossed Ty Meyer's face at this. This was what Smoke had been waiting for. His eyes narrowed, and he swallowed to clear his mouth before speaking.
What you're asking is not possible. The mayor prevailed on me to help rid your town of the trash. I'm doing exactly that, and I do not need the people I'm supposed to be protecting to come whining about slow business. The last time I looked, there's not a cradle-to-grave assurance of being taken care of in this country. A man's got to carry his own weight here. It's not the job of government, whether city, territory, or the stripe pants boys in Washington, to guarantee you anything, let alone a right to success. That's up to you, to do your very best you can. If you don't participate and wait for someone else to do it all for you, you deserve to fail. I suggest you all give Eb here a little more business for that printing press. Do up some flyers on your own, explaining that not one local will be turned away, and you might even list a few specials in your shops. Then see that they're circulated among those living outside town. Now, I'd like to finish my...
By God, man, you can't be serious.
If you're going to bring God into this, Preacher always taught me that he helps those who help themselves. I'd suggest, gentlemen, that you abide by that rule.
Smoke looked around quickly to find himself the only one standing. He strode out onto the boardwalk. Two gangling young louts stood unsteadily in the street, reeling from the effect of too much liquor. Their dirty blonde hair hung in long, greasy hangs that swayed with each drunken step they took. They could have been twins, except that one stood a good 4 inches shorter than the other and looked as though his face had yet to need a razor. The older wore a scraggly wisp of yellow hair on his chin. He also held Marshal Grover Larson by the shirt collar. He spoke as Smoke came into the light.
He done that right nice, Drew. But she got a ways to go to be as good as me. Watch me shoot the O out the word groceries on that winder.
No!
Smoke gave a hard glance over his shoulder to Ed Harbinson.
Would you like to see your other window go, or do you want me to do the job I was hired for?
Go on, go on.
Smoke Jensen stepped off the boardwalk and took a stance in the dirt street.
That's enough, boys. Let Marshal Larson go and give me those guns.
Grant Eckers and his younger brother Drew had ridden into Muddy Gap to get supplies for their father's ranch. They also intended on having a few drinks and maybe sporting some with the girls in the gold boot. Although only 16, Drew had been assured by his older brother that he'd have no trouble getting whiskey. They had ridden up to where Marshal Grover Larson stood watch. Being locals, the lawman had passed them on through. Unfortunately for him, the brothers had been sucking on the dregs of a bottle supplied by Grant, and their liquor-fogged brains made them take exception to the prohibition signs.
What the hell? Who are you, mister?
I'm the new sheriff. I'll thank you to turn the marshal loose now.
And what if we won't?
Then one or both of you will be seriously hurt.
We'll see about that, Sheriff.
Smoke pulled his peacemaker with blinding speed and shot Grant in the right shoulder. A large, wet stain appeared in the crotch of his trousers. Drew gaped at his older brother and kept his weapon pointed carefully skyward. 45 still in hand, Smoke Jensen pointed at Grant.
Marshal, take this whining baby to jail and get him patched up. Now, Drew, is it? You have two choices. Give up or get a bullet like he did.
Sullenly, Drew did as he had been told. Smoke Jensen spun the boy around and gave him a quick pat down. Then he roughly shoved Drew in the direction of the jail. Later on that day, Harmon Eckers burst into Smoke's office demanding the release of his sons. Before Smoke knew it, the man got violent and Smoke had to throw him in jail as well. If things kept up this way, he was going to have to build a whole new jail just to keep up with the demand. They had to do something. Delia Olson realized that after the shock of her husband's murder began to wear off. For days she couldn't count, she had sat in a daze, seeing nothing, hearing nothing, not even caring. She dimly recalled that Tommy had cooked for his sisters, cared for her, and saw that she kept her hands and face clean. Through her grief, she recalled Tommy swearing as he dug the graves for Sven and the boy they had taken in, Elmer Godwin. Tommy's hands had been blistered and raw when he completed the sorrowful task. That had caused him to delay the burial until the next day, his throbbing hands smeared with salve and bandaged. Tears sprang to her eyes when she hastily brushed away.
Come on, children. We have to collect everything we can find. They are our memories.
Tommy had been a real man, someone to lean on in the time of her darkness. She looked now and saw the wagon he had repaired, how hard he had worked, sweating as he labored. With the shirt off, she could see his immature muscles strain and tremble with the effort to work the jack and raise the wagon bed. Sven had taught him well, she thought, as she dimly recalled him replacing two spokes and sweating the steel tire onto the damaged wheel. It had taken all his strength to lift the heavy object into place. Then he had tightened the hub nut and freed the jack. The beaming pride that had shone on his face made her heart lurch even now. Delia heard the sound of a horse's hooves and looked up in surprise. Her satisfaction in her son soared as she saw him leading their old plow horse up toward the barnyard.
Look what I found, Ma! We can use the wagon now!
That's fine. That's wonderful, Tommy. Put him in the corral and come help us collect what belongings we can find. Maybe we can leave yet today.
In that case, I'll just hitch up now!
With their scant possessions loaded, Delia handed the girls up into the wagon box and took her place on the driver's seat an hour later. Tommy took the reins and slapped the rump of the sway-back old gelding and they rolled down the lane. With only a brief backward glance at the graves, the Olsen family left the ruins of their ranch. Smoke Jensen had finished up a cup of coffee and made ready to return to a stint of duty on the deadline when Boyne Kelso stormed into the office, Mayor Norton in tow.
Sheriff, you'll have to release Harmon Eckers and his sons, right now if not sooner.
Why is that?
You have no idea what you have here.
What I have here, Mr. Kelso, are two wet-behind-the-ears squirts, drunk as skunks, and shooting up the town. And their father, who assaulted an officer of the law, threatening to break my back like a twig.
Well, that's not important. Harmon Eckers is the most influential rancher in the area. He runs 800 head of cattle and employs 3 dozen hands, and he has friends.
Then it's likely he'll not be seeing them soon. He threatened a peace officer, and his sons broke the no guns law and shot up the property of other people. Now, you have to excuse me. I have a saloon to clean out of drifters and trash. Then I'm doing the posting line.
Smoke Jensen entered the Trailside Saloon and came face to face with an even dozen angry hands from the Eckers Ranch. A bull of a man Smoke figured out to be the foreman took a step away from the bar and faced him.
We're gonna mosey over to that jail of yours and take out our boss and his sons. And there ain't a damn thing you can do about it.
Oh, I beg to differ with that.
There ain't no way we're gonna allow any two-bit tin-horn lawman to stand in our way.
He completed the last of that boast well within the reach of Smoke Jensen. His eyes showed white before he hit the boards. Smoke followed up immediately, while momentary surprise froze the two closest range hands. He chose the one on his right and delivered a 1-2 punch to chest and jaw that put out the man's lights in a blink. By then, the other cowboy was moving. He made a grab for Smoke Jensen's left arm, only to close his fingers on air. Smoke turned so quickly the hapless youth didn't even see the fist coming, knocked him back against the bar. Dazed, he shook his head in an effort to clear his vision, wiping blood from his split lip. Then he launched himself at Smoke again. His knees sagging, the young cowboy gave up any attempt to cover himself and fell forward into the arms of Smoke Jensen. Smoke swung him to the left and dropped the groggy youth into a chair. At once, the battered man slumped over and laid his head on the green baize table. Four more of Eckard's hands decided to enter the fray. They started towards Smoke, one of them drawing a knife from his boot top.
Well, that's far enough, boys.
Marshal Grove Larson stood in the open rear doorway. He held a 10-gauge greener, the muzzles lined up with their bellies. Slowly, they eased back against the bar. Smoke Jensen looked them over thoughtfully.
Not a one of you went for a gun, which speaks well for you. I can understand hot-headedness. What I can't abide is a cowardly act.
Smoke walked over to the one who had pulled his knife. He reached out and plucked the blade from a numb hand. He raised it before the man's eyes and took the tip between thumb and two fingers. Slowly, Smoke bent the steel until it snapped in front of the hilt. A fleeting smile played across his lips as he dropped the broken knife to the floor. He pointed a finger at the man's suddenly ashen face.
This one goes to jail. The rest of you, drag those two out of here and get out of town.
Abruptly, Smoke turned his back on him and walked to the door. And just as meekly, the knife artist followed. Night caught up to Delia Olson and her children before she wanted it. She estimated that they had barely made 20 miles from their burned-out ranch in the past 2 days. The tired old horse Tommy had rounded up had to stop and rest far too often. An hour ago, they had made camp. Sarah Jane had gamely gathered wood and buffalo chips for the cook fire. The 11-year-old had taken her father's death harder than the other children, though Delia had to admit that her daughter's spirits had lifted since starting for Buffalo, the nearest town. Sarah Jane looked on the journey as an adventure. While Sarah Jane brought fuel, Tommy unhitched the horse and slipped a feed bag over the nag's nose. Then he unloaded the wagon and made a ring of stones to contain their fire. Delia busied herself slicing bacon on the lower tailgate of the wagon, paring potatoes and cutting onions. It would be a sparse meal. Tommy had not found any game to shoot.
Ma, what are we going to do when we get to Buffalo?
I don't know, Tommy. I'll find us a place to stay, take work somewhere. You and the girls will attend school.
Oh, Ma, do we have to?
Yes, son. Lord knows I've done the best I can teaching you at home. At least you all can read and write and do your sums. But that's not enough. There's a whole world of things to learn out there.
I should get work too, Ma. I'm too old to go to school.
Buffalo has a 4-year upper school now. I'm sure they will welcome you.
You mean people go to school even after they're too old for the 8th grade?
Of course. Some people, like doctors and lawyers, even go on to college.
Nah, that don't sound like something I'd like to do.
It isn't likely you'll get the chance.
Delia cast a regretful glance in the direction of the ranch.
Although your father and I had our dreams.
After the meal, a sky full of stars brought back painful memories to the children of their father. Delia busied herself with the cleanup. Her concentration broke when she turned to find Tommy seated between the girls, an arm around the shoulder of each.
I know it hurts. I miss Pa too, and Elmer. There's this great big empty place inside me. But we have to go on, you know? We have to look out for Ma.
Tears welled in Delia's eyes, which she hastily wiped away. How strong her boy was. A thrill of pride ran through her. Delia knew at that moment that everything was going to work out all right. This man boy of hers, only turned 14 this summer, would see to that. While the girls scampered off to the wagon, Delia walked over to her son and put her arms around his shoulders, hugging him tightly.
Thank you, son. Thank you for helping with the girls. They need the comforting, and so do you.
Me, Ma? Shucks, I'm okay. And so are you, right?
Yes, son. I really am.
Slowly, the coals ebbed until only the frosty light of the stars shone down upon them. The next morning, on his way to the Sorry Place Saloon, Smoke came upon a quartet of surly, low-browed louts milling in the street outside the General Mercantile. They turned sour looks in his direction. One of them, a lank shock of dirty blonde hair hanging down over his nearly non-existent forehead, poked a thick, stubby finger at Smoke.
Who says we can't wear guns in town? Man in there said we had to give up our guns, get out of town.
He's right. By my orders.
There's four of us and just one of you. How are you gonna make us?
Whip this if necessary.
Who the hell might you be?
I'm the sheriff. The name's Jensen. Folks call me Smoke.
Oh, hell, we done got the wrong town.
That you do.
Damn! Those people down in Colorado don't talk about nothing but how good you are with the gun, Mr. Jensen. Sheriff. We'll leave and we won't make no trouble, honest.
I believe that. Now have a nice ride out of town.
Smoke watched him depart, then turned to observe that the shot-out window of Harbinson's Mercantile had been boarded up. While he idly inspected it, Ed Harbinson stepped out onto the boardwalk. He rubbed his hands industriously on his apron tail and produced a smile.
Sheriff Jensen, I want to tell you that I was sure wrong about your posting law. Yes, sir, wrong as can be. You know my business is actually picked up. Those advertising flyers you suggested have been a godsend. You're doing a good job, an excellent job, in fact, and I want you to know that all the people of town are behind you 100%.
Smoke gave him a quizzical expression.
If they are, how come none of them are rushing over to volunteer to be deputies, Mr. Harbinson? Tell me that.
Early in the afternoon, Smoke Jensen worked out his teeth with a whittled stick as he stepped out of the Sorry Place. Pig's feet had been tasty and tender, with just the right amount of vinegar pickled to them. He ambled along the boardwalk and noted with satisfaction the lack of hard cases and drifter trash. He had nearly reached the front of the trail side. Smoke reached the bat wings in three long strides. Over the curved top of the louvered doors, he saw a bulldog-faced hard case standing over the body of a local rancher, a smoking six-gun in one hand. Smoke stepped through the swinging doors, peacemaker in hand.
Put it down and raise your hands.
Like hell, I...
Two other gun slicks, friends of the dead thug, took exception to Smoke's treatment of their companion and went for their guns. Oh! Ah! Smoke looked around for further resistance. He had none, he saw. Then he took in the gawkers who peered into the saloon from the windows and over the double batwing doors, drawn by the sounds of the brief, deadly shootout. One of them he soon recognized as Mayor Norton.
You done it, Sheriff Jensen. That's the last of them. There's not a piece of riffraff left in the town. I never believed anyone could do it so fast.
I had some help, Mayor.
You're too modest. You're the one who put the backbone back in Grover Lawson. Fred Chase was only doing his job. Credit is all yours.
There's a lot of it I would rather not have had to do.
Of course, I understand.
No, Mayor Norton. I don't think you could possibly know how I feel.
Smoke reached for his badge and pulled it from his vest front.
I'm through here. My job is finished. I have a herd to catch up to.
20 minutes later, Smoke Jensen had all of his possessions loaded into saddlebags and placed in the pouches of a pack saddle rig. After a few pointers to Fred Chase, he left the sheriff's job in his capable hands. He mounted Cougar and rode out of town with a rented pack horse on lead. To his surprise, nearly the whole population turned out to see him off. But not all of the residents of Muddy Gap gathered to wish their recent sheriff a fond farewell. Sealed behind his desk, Boyne Kelso turned a hard glove to the second floor window, from which he could see the tall, lean figure of Smoke Jensen riding out of town. He wet full lips and tossed down a shot of bourbon. In the chair opposite him, his son Brandon sipped at a beer.
You'll get yours, you bastard.
What do you mean, Pa? He ain't gonna be around here no more.
Never mind, son. Where he's going, he's about to step into a hornet's nest.
Which brought Boyne's thoughts to the immediate. He had to get a message to Reno Jim Urien to inform him that the owner of the herd of horses they intended to rustle was the notorious gunfighter Smoke Jensen. His next thought brought Boyne a great deal of comfort. He had every confidence that Reno would know exactly what to do.